This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. Brooke Gladstone is off. I'm Bob Garfield. This week for the American political press, it has been all impeachment all the time. You'd expect no less for only the third presidential impeachment in U.S. history. And as has been so for 3 months, since reports of an emergent whistleblower first appeared, news consumers have been blessed with diligent documentation, incisive analysis, revealing investigations of ongoing mischief, and methodical debunking of both fresh lies and the zombie lies that will not die. You know, journalism. Or, as the president and the Congressional Republican Caucus call it, bias.
After an 11-hour debate last night, the House ultimately voted to impeach President Trump on two articles, abuse of power and obstruction of Congress.
We just saw what is a very bitterly divided America on display. Virtually every Democrat voting for impeachment, every Republican voting against it.
It comes nearly 3 months after House Speaker Nancy Pelosi announced an impeachment inquiry.
I solemnly and sadly open the debate on the impeachment of the President of the United States.
To the audience on the political right, witnesses of fact and the reporters who report on them are guilty of partisanship and treachery, which, if you're a journalist, is hard to listen to and evidently triggers a media reflex of another sort, the passing along of false equivalencies. It's sometimes called both sides-ism. Wishing to maintain an image of fairness, balance, and objectivity, and wishing not to be or even seem to be partisan, news organizations seem incapable of dealing with stories in which one party has all the facts on its side. John Alsup writes the Columbia Journalism Review morning newsletter, The Media Today, and he has been following a rash of both-sidism outbreaks.
There was a story last weekend in the New York Times, for example, that seemed to attract the ire of quite a few media critics on Twitter, framing a hearing in the Judiciary Committee in the House about impeachment as a partisan brawl, literally used the words both sides on four occasions. You know, one of them was in a quotation. But nonetheless, there was phrasing kind of throughout that story. It was very redolent of the Democrats having one view of the impeachment and the Republicans having another, which is true until you consider that the Democrats have the facts, by and large, on their side. And the Republicans are distributing talking points that range from extreme disingenuousness to outright wackadoo conspiracy theories. Clearly, those are not equivalent positions.
Tell me what the story was meant to be and tell me what you think it accomplished.
The story was about a hearing in the House Judiciary Committee. You know, the headline was the first thing that infuriated a lot of those critics. The breach widens as Congress nears a partisan impeachment. This notion of partisan impeachment, which again is factually the case in the sense that it is the Democratic Party who are in favor of doing this, but it's that partisan framing that again reduces this to a question of two sides. One side says X, the other side says Y, regardless of the factual equivalency of those positions. There were instances of that kind of language throughout the piece. Jay Rosen, who is a journalism professor at New York University, pulled out, I think, like 12 examples of this both sides dynamics. For instance, disputes over basic facts. Both sides engaged in a kind of mutually assured destruction, the different impeachment realities the two parties are living in. Again, factually, you can make a case that all of these things are true by the letter of what they say. But one of the realities is a real reality, is actually reality. And the other one is an unreality, or it is to a very large extent.
It's also easy to understand how news organizations get tied up into such knots when reporting facts and evidence and context essentially serves one political party and plays havoc with the other. We want to be perceived as honest brokers. And yet, whenever this situation occurs, we face the accusations that we are an opposition party unto ourselves. What the hell do we do about that?
When you start chasing popular perception of your coverage starts to become reactionary. But I think it's particularly the case when one side has really figured out that if they spin and lie and deflect and deceive, they can take advantage of that coverage model that you just described. One side has worked out how to game that system. If you are trying to sort of appease that logic, you are asking to be taken advantage of. The current model of both sides clearly at the moment is rebounding to the benefit of one side. It is a victory in and of itself for that side to have their conspiratorial talking points taken seriously, because it muddies the waters. Their strategy is to muddy the waters. There are always trade-offs here. There are always choices to be made. And the idea that trying to steer a middle path, you will not be accused of bias, you will not benefit one side or the other, I think is a complete fiction.
The epithet that we face and have faced for, you know, at least 50 years as a part of a coordinated attack on the Fourth Estate is the word bias. How are we as an institution to explain to the electorate that there is a difference between bias and analysis and attention to the evidence and just judgment?
Is this impeachment story not the perfect story to try and start dispelling some of those accusations of bias? This isn't necessarily a story or a set of facts that has to rest on ideology or liberal assumptions. It's a pretty easy and simple set of facts. The reason we have this impeachment inquiry is because Democrats figured they could fit what Trump did with Ukraine and why it's wrong on a bumper sticker. Now, of course, it's not the press's job to be reinforcing Democratic talking points such as they are, but the fact pattern here is actually quite simple and should be of bipartisan concern. And I think if you just cleave close to those facts, then the people who are not totally lost to the poisoned well of misinformation should be able to look at that and say, I don't think this is liberal ideology. I don't think this is bias. This is just a clear set of facts that shows clear wrongdoing. And I think we have allowed those basic facts to get muddied in this impeachment story.
Well, we do have a bias, of course, and the bias is to detail. It was probably inevitable that in the hunt to fill in the holes in the story, that we would find some incongruities and different recollections and, you know, even suspicions about the truthfulness of some of the witnesses. Surely you're not suggesting we should have just stopped at the whistleblower complaint and waited for the House Democrats to act.
No, I don't think so at all. And all of the incongruities, ambiguities, all of that had to be examined in very close detail by the press. But the White House, first of all, literally released, you know, a record of Trump's call with the president of Ukraine, which shows him asking for an investigation into the Bidens and the Democratic Party based on a conspiracy theory. And Trump then came out onto the White House lawn very early in this process and told reporters Ukraine should investigate the Bidens and so should China.
How can it be that we haven't figured out a way to just be us and, you know, do journalism without having to worry about the perceptions swirling all around us?
It's really, really hard. There's not a level playing field here. It's much easier when you don't have to obey rules of integrity and fact to come up with a compelling narrative. Obviously, we as the press don't have control over the way information is distributed in the 21st century. If we can't control these kind of things and all we can control is what we do, then let's just like not worry so much about what people think about us. Clearly, you have to worry what your readers think about you because you want to serve them a product that they want to read. But there is a difference between doing that in a thoughtful way and compromising the way you would otherwise do your reporting. I think also there is a generational thing. Many big newsrooms are led by people of an older generation who learned journalism, did journalism in an age that looks very different to the one we're in now, in an informational ecosystem that was in many ways totally different, where those old kind of rules of the road were unquestioningly applied, the both sidesism, etc. And I think to a certain extent, old habits die hard.
I feel obliged to ask you this. Does the fact that the press continues to be incapable of dealing with the tension between its job and perceptions of how it does its job, does it mean that the great right-wing media conspiracy won? That somewhere in his grave, Roger Ailes, won?
It's a kind of a depressing question, Bob. No, because it's an ongoing struggle to put the facts across. It doesn't end at one moment in time. You know, this is a number of different battles being fought across all sorts of different terrains and different types of coverage. So I don't think you can just conclude that those who would seek to propagandize and mislead have won. Political realities change. Hegemonies never last forever. And we need to go forward into the future and put it on a sounder factual basis as we can muster.
John, thank you.
Thank you for having me, Bob.
John Alsop lives in London, where he writes their morning newsletter, The Media Today. Coming up, nearly a half century ago, the Pentagon Papers revealed the government's lies about Vietnam. Lesson learned? Guess not. The newly published Afghanistan Papers are an infuriating sequel.